Welcome to Ugeria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ugeria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ugeria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ugeria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Sam Grass in hot, steamy Atlanta, Georgia. Joining me this morning is Lee Cantor. How are you, Lee?
I am doing good, Sam. You seem all fired up today. What happened? Rough morning?
Yeah, sleepless night, so it energized me. That's correct. Also joining us today is Brad Culp in Dallas, Texas. Brad, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing just fine.
That's great. Well, why don't you take it, Brad, and do your little trivia, introduce the guests, and do your little trivia of the day.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be doing better because trivia is really limited today. Today, in 1914, was the day that Archduke Francis Ferdinand of Austria-Hungary was assassinated, and that kicked off World War I, so that's a momentous date in history. The only other thing I got for you is joining the ranks of senior citizens today is Sally Struthers. Do you remember her?
She's only turning a senior citizen today? What has she been doing in the last 10 years?
Today is her 62nd birthday.
Wow.
But do you remember
so
Sally Struthers?
She's only about 2 years older than you, Lee.
I thought she was much older than that.
She was the daughter in All in the Family.
Right.
And the daughter-in-law, I can't remember. No, I think she was the daughter in All in the Family. The other thing that I discovered about her is she was the voice of Pebbles in the Flintstones. Remember that old cartoon?
Oh, that's good.
So, and about to join the ranks of senior citizens is Vida Blue. You remember him? Pitcher for the A's and the Giants and the Royals?
That was before Lee's time.
Oh, yeah, I have no idea.
Are you kidding? You've got to be older than me, Lee.
Let's not get carried away. There's no way.
Well, I remember Vida Blue as a kid. Of course, I grew up in the San Francisco area.
Oh, right.
So he was a big, big hit there. Well, we've got a full house today, so we need to get right into it. Today in Dallas, we're privileged to have two guests. We have with us Ms. Sarah Center, who is Miss Texas Senior America for 2009. And we also have with us Dwayne Kruger, who is a specialist in reverse mortgages for Next Generation Financial Services. So we're going to start out this morning with Sarah Center. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. And we really appreciate you being here with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So you are, and have been for the past almost a year, been Miss Texas Senior America 2009.
Yes.
And I guess you're getting ready to give up your crown.
Yes, in 18 days, I crown my successor and we with our pageant here in Dallas and give up the duties of the queen.
Well, I want to talk a lot more about that. I want to hear about that. But before we get into that, give us a little bit of background. Tell us about yourself, where you grew up, and what you've done for your career. And ultimately, you want to come back around to how you got involved in this pageant.
Well, I was born in El Dorado, Kansas, moved to Texas when I was 5 years old. So I consider myself a native Texan, kind of, sort of. I grew up in Irving, Texas, and graduated from Irving High School in 1965, and have been married to my wonderful husband for 33 years. We have two children and three grandchildren, and we own our own business, which is a custom workroom, and we take designers and work with them with creating their envisions of what can be done on a window or bedding ensemble or even children's rooms. And we've been in business now for 16 years. So with owning your own business, you get to do all the fun stuff along with sweeping the floors. I'm also a Dallas Tap Dazzler, which is a tap dancing group that we perform over 100. We do over 100 performances a year throughout Texas, and we've been known to go out of state a couple of times. And that's how I got involved with the pageant. There were two former queens that are Dallas Tap Dazzlers.
So what is exactly a tap dazzler?
We are tap dancers. We're all over 45 years of age. We're a performing group. We're also mothers, working ladies, grandmothers. I don't know what else I can say about the dazzlers. And we have a lot of fun.
So how did you get involved in the tap dancing? Is that something you learned as a kid, or did you?
I've been tap dancing since I was 5 years old.
Oh, wow.
And so I had seen them a couple of times, and they kept saying I was too young. And I kept saying, no, but I'm a grandmother. And they said, no, you have to be over 45 or 50 to be in here. So when I turned 50 and I ran into them again, I said, I'm now over 50, and now I'm going to be a dancer.
How about that?
So,
interesting.
And I've been that for 10 years now.
10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so through that organization, then, you met these former queens.
I did.
And they encouraged you to get involved, or how did that
happen? Well, when I turned 60, I want to be like you. I want to be a queen. And so when I did turn 60, I learned a solo dance and competed for the first time in 2008. I was first runner-up, and in 2009, I won the crown.
So now, not having been to one of these events before, tell me a little bit about what goes into the event, what is the criteria for judging, and just give me a little bit of background on that.
The pageant, it revolves around all ladies over 60 years of age. So we go through the same, we meet with five judges on an interview, we model a gown, we have a talent, and we do a philosophy of life. We're just like the Miss America pageant, except we don't do the bikini. You don't want to see grandma out there in a bikini. But we have the same, the judging criteria. You know, you have so many points for your talent, so many points for how you present yourself in your gown, your philosophy of life, and then your interview process. What our pageant is about is we're promoting the redefining of the senior woman. We believe that if you keep active and involved, you're going to keep healthy mentally and physically. You're at that age of elegance now. We're used to, they would say, oh, you're 60 years old, you need to go sit in your rocking chair and just, you know, get out of our way. Well, that's not the case anymore. We think we're 60 years old, and we're the new 40, and we can do anything we want to. So we're trading in that rocking chair for high heels, sneakers, and tap shoes.
I love the way you put that, the age of elegance. That's a terrific way of looking at it. And certainly, you know, with people living longer, there's absolutely no reason to sit in a rocking chair.
Right, right. I'm a businesswoman. I'm 63 years old. I work 40 to 50 hours a week. I'm a mother, a grandmother, a wife. I'm a member of, like I said, the Dallas Tap Dazzlers. I keep involved all the time.
I guess you're busy, aren't you?
And you know what? If I wasn't busy, I would wither away. And that's why we promote, if you keep that activity going, keep doing what you've always done, you're going to keep mentally and physically healthy.
Terrific. So you've been the queen for the last year. Is that the right term for it?
Yes.
What has been, you know, what have you done as part of the pageant over the last year? Have there been responsibilities that you've had?
Yes, I've gone to several retirement villages, senior assisted living facilities, and you know we put on cameo shows, which are some of the contestants and the queens, and we go out and do variety shows and entertain these residents. And they truly appreciate it. We encourage them, you know, be active. Come dance with us if you want to come to the pageant. We'd love for you to come to the pageant and see what these ladies can do. We have ladies in our pageant that are up to in their 80s. that participate. Yes. And so I do that, and I go to a lot of senior expos, you know, where the different health insurances are provided or different things that are offered for the senior adult. And we go out, and then we meet with the seniors there and encourage. The main thing I do is I try to encourage not only the senior ladies but the senior men to keep active, you know, keep going. Don't go sit and rest.
Right, right.
But that's,
so I guess there's no Mr. Texas Senior America pageant.
Well, my husband's been called that a couple of times, but no.
By you or somebody else?
Yeah.
Interesting. So then you talked about the process of the judging. What part of that is, or is it all open to the public? I mean, there is an event, and it's coming up. Is it a several-hour event? Is it an all-day event? Or what happens?
The contestants actually arrive on Thursday. We go through, orientations. We go through rehearsals, preparing the show. And then they prepare by doing their interviews on Friday. On Saturday, the actual pageant begins at 1 o'clock. They model their gowns. They do each one do their talents. And by then, the judges have already met them, so they have already begun calculating points for each one of the ladies. This is going to be held August the 14th at the Doubletree Hotel here in Dallas at Midway and LBJ at 1 o'clock, and we'd love for everyone to come. Last 2 years, we've had over 700 in attendance.
Wow.
We do have 25 contestants, and these ladies have a lot that they bring to the show. It's quite a show and an event.
That's a lot of people.
Yes, it is. It's scary.
So it's I imagine it is. Getting up and tap dancing in front of 700 people or whatever.
You know what? I got out there last year and I was scared to death, and I said, go for it, you know. It's either make it or break it time.
Brad, could I ask a question of Sarah, please?
Please.
Sarah, I am not quite your age, but I'm approaching it. I have a business that I work as you suggested you do, am involved with my children. And my question is, how do you maintain your high level of energy? Because frankly, in my days when I come home, I'm done. I don't want to do anything. What do you do that allows you to rejuvenate yourself?
Oh, I don't think I do anything special. I just know that I have the responsibility of keeping the business running and then what I need to do when I get home, and I just keep going. I don't know why. I don't know what just keeps my energy level going. I guess a couple cups of coffee in the morning.
Well, I drink about 40 ounces of coffee every morning. I guess what I'm asking is, any pieces of advice that our audience might grab hold of, that would certainly be helpful.
Just keep a positive attitude and keep, just keep being positive about everything. I don't like to be negative about anything, and I think that helps quite a bit. You know, I try to look for the everything in everybody. Your glass is half full, not half empty. And I think that's how I look at everything, and that's what helps me keep the energy level going.
That's good advice. Tell me how this experience has, you've been the in this role for a year. You're about to give up the crown, but I gotta believe the experience has changed you at least a little bit, and that there will be some things that you'll continue to do going forward. Can you respond to that?
Yes. When I was actually crowned, I was shy, believe it or not, and to get up in front of and speak in front of people, I could not do it. So this has brought that out of me, where I can get up and give a 30-minute speech now, hold a microphone in my hand and actually talk into it. The first time they gave me a microphone, I looked at it and just froze and go, But, you know, the experience, as each one that I knew that I had to cross those little bridges and take those little baby steps, and now I can give a speech. And yes, going forward, I still have engagements booked out till November.
Wow.
To go out and to get luncheons and give speeches and to promote the pageant.
Terrific. Well, that's we really appreciate you having been here with us this morning. We want to encourage all of our listeners to get out on Saturday, August 14th, and get down to the Doubletree, 1 o'clock, and check out the Miss Senior Texas pageant. Sarah, if our guests wanted to contact you, is there a way that they could do that?
Yes, they could call me. My phone number is 972-617-8090, and I'll be glad to help you out with either getting tickets for the pageant or answering any questions.
Very good. Well, thanks again for being here with us this morning.
My pleasure.
We are going to switch gears now, and we're going to chat with Dwayne Kruger from Next Generation Financial Services. Good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning, Brad. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you again for agreeing to be here on short notice. So, Dwayne, you, I guess, start the same way. You know, we're going to work around to your business and to a discussion on reverse mortgages, but give us a little bit of background on yourself and you know, where you're from and you know, kind of how you came to be where you are today.
I'll do that. Well, I grew up on a farm in Illinois, so I'm still a small town farm boy at heart. Went to college in Illinois, graduated from Eastern Illinois University with a bachelor's and master's degree in education. Spent a number of years working for a public school district as a teacher and a guidance counselor. From there, I sort of transitioned into the corporate world and took a position with a publishing company whose business was the education market. Mm-hmm. So went from being an educator to working with educators all over the country. Did that for a number of years. And then I think two things were going on. One, the company that I was working for was going through some significant changes. And I also met a couple at my church that were reverse mortgage loan officers, which was very interesting to me because at the time I met them, I had never heard of a reverse mortgage, and it took me a while to figure out what a reverse mortgage was. But even more important than that, though, I started to hear stories from them of the types of things they were able to do to help senior homeowners who were in need of money. So about 4.5 years ago, I made a change and became a reverse mortgage loan officer.
So when you met this couple, how long ago was that?
That was probably a little over 5 years ago when I first started talking with them about what it was they were doing.
And how long have reverse mortgages been around?
Well, my years may be off just a little bit on this, but I think nationwide, I think the federal government approved the program. It's probably around 15 years or so, you know, and I may be a little off on that. I'm currently based in the state of Texas, and they have not been available quite as long in Texas because it actually required the state of Texas to amend the Constitution before reverse mortgages could become available in Texas.
Oh, wow.
But they've been available in Texas probably close to 10 years. Again, I may be a little off on that number also.
Okay. So let's back up just a minute. And, you know, I think that most people think they know what a reverse mortgage is, but let's go back to the basics for a minute and let me have you describe what a reverse mortgage is. And, you know, and then maybe talk a little bit about some of the misconceptions that people might have about it in terms of, you know, again, I thought I understood it until I had a conversation several weeks ago with a guy that really kind of opened my eyes to some different aspects of this product.
Brad, what you just described is pretty typical. My experience is that most people think they understand reverse mortgages, but if they've never had a chance to have a conversation with a reverse mortgage specialist, they're probably dealing with a lot of false information. And so I always spend a lot of time trying to clear that up. But let me just describe what a reverse mortgage is. First of all, the reverse mortgage program is a program that was created by the federal government, is highly regulated by the federal government. In fact, the federal government insures the loans. And I say that if we're talking about an FHA reverse mortgage, there might be some other reverse mortgages out there, but almost all the reverse mortgages being done right now are the FHA home equity conversion mortgage, reverse mortgage. But it was a program that was created because what the government saw, something that we're all aware of, is that Social Security was going to meet a smaller and smaller percentage of people's retirement needs. At the same time, we had a lot of seniors who were sitting on a pretty sizable asset. That's their home. So the reverse mortgage was created to give seniors a way, another way to start to access some of the equity from that home. What it is, it's a way to borrow on some of the equity they have in their home. They're free to use that money however they want to use it, but they're not required to make any repayment of that loan as long as at least one of, if it's a couple, one of the people on the loan still lives in the home. So it's a way to take out a loan without taking on the burden of monthly payments. Many seniors are trying to get rid of monthly payments, not take on additional monthly payments. So no money gets repaid as long as they still live in the home. Now, that created an interesting dilemma, because when somebody does a reverse mortgage, we don't know for sure how long they're going to have the money. Therefore, we don't know for sure how much they're going to owe, and we don't know what their home is going to be worth at any point in the future. Well, the FHA said we won't create a program that could ever result in the senior, or if they pass, their heirs, having a loan that the home won't cover. So as a result, the FHA insures all of the FHA reverse mortgages. What that means is that at the time the loan comes due, if the fair market value of the home is less than what they owe on the loan at that time, they only owe up to the fair market value of the loan. The FHA insurance will act like a gap insurance and pick up the difference between the value of the home and what they owe. Now, the flip side of that is if they owe less than what the home is worth, all that extra equity belongs to them. So they get the best of both possible worlds.
Interesting. So it's essentially a situation where the seniors, I mean, obviously somebody's got to make money here, you know, so it's set up as a loan and there's interest on the loan, but it's a somewhat risk-free way of accessing the equity in that home and being able to stay there for as long as they want to stay there, or as long as they live.
That's correct. It's a way, I refer to it sometimes as it's a reverse mortgage is a way for seniors to start to live off of their home and living off the equity in the home. Now, that means because there is a loan that will be repaid when they leave the property, there'll be less equity remaining in that home than if they didn't have the reverse mortgage. In fact, if they live there long enough, they may use up all the equity in the home.
So what are some of the common misunderstandings around this product?
Well, there are several of them that I think get in the way of some of these misunderstandings. Oftentimes get in the way of seniors finding out if a reverse mortgage is a good fit for them, a good business decision for them. Let me touch on several of these. One of the real common ones is, well, if I do a reverse mortgage, I'm giving up the title to my home. That's incorrect. If like any other mortgage, you maintain the title to your property. You have a lien on the property that's eventually going to be repaid, but it's still your home. In fact, because it's still your home, you have some of those same responsibilities that other homeowners have. You have to continue to pay your property taxes. You have to keep the home adequately insured, and you have to adequately maintain the home. But the home, it is still their home. The second one is one of the ones I just touched on, and the fear that if I do a reverse mortgage, I'm going to leave my heirs, I might be leaving my heirs a debt that the home won't cover. That's impossible. The FHA insurance makes sure that if they are what I refer to as upside down on the loan, they only owe up to the value of the home. Another common misperception, and this kind of goes both ways. Some people have the idea that, well, if my home's paid for, I can't do a reverse mortgage. It's only for people who still owe money on their home. Or some people think, well, if my home's not all the way paid for, I can't do a reverse mortgage. People who still owe money on their home are eligible to do a reverse mortgage. The rule is that they have to be eligible to borrow at least enough money to clear any existing liens. Let me give you an example. If somebody owes $120,000 on their home, and we look and they're looking into reverse mortgage, and we look at it, and it looks like they're going to be eligible for about $100,000, well, they're $20,000 short. Unless they have a way to bring $20,000 to the table, they're not going to be able to do a reverse mortgage. Let's take another example. They only owe $80,000 on the home. It looks like they can borrow about $100,000. Well, if they do a reverse mortgage, the $80,000 that they currently own on their home will go away. That mortgage payment will go away, and they would still have about $20,000 left. In fact, an increasing reason for people to do a reverse mortgage is to get rid of existing liens. If I could just get rid of that mortgage payment every month, it'd be like somebody's giving me a check.
So let's bring this into real simple, practical, understandable terms, if we could. I guess the first question is, what percentage of a home's value can be borrowed against with this type of loan?
It can vary. There are a number of factors that determine the amount of money that they're able to borrow. Obviously, one is the value of the home. Second one are the interest rates at the time that they close on the loan. The lower the interest rate, and interest rates are very low right now, the more money they'll be able to borrow. But probably the most important factor is the age of the youngest borrower. Reverse mortgages are truly a program that reward people for being older. The older the person is, the higher percentage of that home equity they'll be able to access. And the reason for that is this is a loan. It's a business transaction. There's interest being charged on this loan that will eventually be paid back. So in theory, the older someone is, the less time they'll have that money, the less interest that will eventually be paid back, so we can afford to give them more money up front because there'll be less interest that's going to be accruing over time. In terms of percentages, first of all, the minimum age by law is 62. There is no maximum age. If somebody is around 62 years old, you know, that those percentages may be somewhere in the low 50%, you know, 50, 51, 52% of that home value that they'd be able to borrow.
Okay.
If they're in their mid or upper 80s, they may approach 75% of the home equity. So, age can make a significant difference.
So the way this might work is just as an example, if a couple in their 60s had a home that was worth, just for the sake of round numbers, $200,000, they might be able to borrow $100,000. And let's say they have an existing mortgage of $50,000. So that $100,000, would that then be used to first pay off the existing mortgage?
Yes, the first $50,000 would go to pay off the existing mortgage. So if they qualified for $100,000, $50,000 of that $100,000 would go to pay off the existing mortgage. They would have another $50,000. They'd get rid of that mortgage payment. They would have another $50,000 to use however they want to use it.
And do they get that as a lump sum, or do they get it in a like an annuity type distribution? Or
depends how they set the loan up. There are a number of options available for people in terms of how they want to take their money. One option is to take all that money right up front. Second option is to set up a type of monthly payment where they would be receiving a certain amount of money every month. And the third option is a line of credit. where there's a line, you have your money sitting there. As you need money, you request it, and that money then would be deposited in your checking account. The and that can become important in terms of how they take that money. The money from a reverse mortgage is not considered income, so therefore they're not going to pay taxes on it. It's not going to affect their income taxes, not going to affect Medicare. But if someone is on Medicaid or looking at Medicaid, that can influence how they want to take their money. They can still do a reverse mortgage, but they might want to look at either, rather than taking a whole bunch of money up front, which could impact Medicaid, they may want to look at taking a monthly payment where they can control the amount of money they're receiving every month, so it's not going to impact Medicaid.
Now, if they're taking a line of credit, does that, where is that money sitting somewhere? Is it accruing interest?
The money's sitting with the lender, and it's depending on the how the terms of the loan, there's a good chance that that line of credit has a growth value. So the longer that amount of money sits there, the more money there is to borrow. With most lenders, in fact, as far as I know, with all lenders, that growth value is not considered interest. Again, they're not earning interest. Interest wouldn't, but the amount of money that they can actually borrow will grow over time.
Okay. And it's kind of another, you know, stream of consciousness question here. What happens if, you know, I mean, let's say they, you know, we're talking about a couple in their 60s, and they take the $50,000, they've got some other money, but, you know, let's say they live, well, and now they're in their 70s, and the money's gone, they spent it. Yeah, I mean, so do they have the option to sell that house at any time and then repay the mortgage, or
yes,
what might happen if they run out of money?
Well, there's a couple of parts to that question. First of all, a senior who does a reverse mortgage is free to pay that loan off at any time. If they leave the home, they'll be required to pay it off at that time. But if they win the lottery or something and want to pay the loan off, there's no prepayment penalty for that. But if a senior has had a reverse mortgage for a while and they do run out of that money, the most important thing to know is that in itself will not force them out of their home. If, you know, when somebody does a reverse mortgage, they don't lose their home. So while the reverse mortgage may not have solved all of their financial issues, while they're trying to resolve those financial issues, one thing that they do know is they're not going to have to leave their home because they've spent all that money.
Right.
If they've had, you know, depending on what's been going on in the economy, a few years ago when home values were better than they are now, and we saw home values continuing to grow around the country, they were in the, you know, it might have even been possible for them to do a refinance of that reverse mortgage, do a new reverse mortgage, which might have given them money. But home values being the way they are right now, we're not seeing many refinances of reverse mortgages. But
okay.
So there are a number of options, but using up all the money will not cause them to lose their home. And when I'm talking with folks about a reverse mortgage, that are researching a reverse mortgage, and one of the things we usually see is if we look at what they're trying to accomplish and what they can get from the reverse mortgage may not solve all of their financial issues. But oftentimes, it will bring the biggest piece of the puzzle to the table. Mm-hmm. And once they have that reverse mortgage and they're trying to work out the other issues, they know they're not going to lose their home.
Right. So you've been doing this for 4.5 years
four and
now.
A half years,
you obviously had another career prior. Tell me how you feel about the business and why do you keep doing what you do?
Well, one of the things that surprised me, because I probably spent more years in sales than I did as an actual educator and counselor, but one of the things I've discovered since I've become a reverse mortgage loan officer is the skills I developed as an educator and a counselor serve me much more than any sales skills I may have developed. So much of what I do is educating seniors, their families, their advisors, you know, might be a financial planner or a banker or whoever it might be, educating them about the reverse mortgage program so that they're clear what the program does and what it doesn't do. What are the pros? What are things they need to make sure they're aware of? Oftentimes when people are looking into reverse mortgages, it's a stressful situation. It takes a lot of patience.
takes, you know, sometimes I have to really help them sort through everything that's going on so they're able to get to the point where they're able to make their own informed decision. But I like helping seniors. Mm-hmm. I like helping seniors figure out if this is a good option for them and helping them get to the point where, again, where they're able to make their own informed decision about what they want to do.
And are you typically dealing with the seniors? Are you dealing with children of seniors, or is it a combination?
The typical loan, the seniors are making their own decision and doing all of their own signing. If, you know, for some reason a power of attorney has kicked in, then their power of attorney might be doing the signing. But oftentimes, even if they're, you know, they're making their own decisions, they're consulting with family members about the situation, and family members may be contacting them with questions.
So for a senior that is wondering if a reverse mortgage might be appropriate for them, what advice might you give to them, kind of generic advice as they embark on the process?
I think a couple of things. You know, I would encourage any senior homeowner that has a plan to stay in their home and may at any point in the future wish they had more money to start learning more about reverse mortgages now. I think the reverse mortgage program will be around for a long, long time. I don't see it going away. So, you know, I think it's important that it can become part of a senior's long-term decision-making process. I think that means locating a reverse mortgage professional that they're comfortable with, that's going to take the time to explain the program, make sure that they really have a good understanding of what kind of fit it may be for them, and someone who's not going to pressure them into making a decision. You know, it's going to give them the freedom to make their own decision, you know, with their own timeline. I think seniors sometimes feel like, well, I shouldn't talk to anybody until I know I want to do this. Well, to be honest with you, they don't know if they want to do it until they've gotten all the information.
Right. You need some expert advice on it.
That's right.
Yeah. Good words. Well, Duane, again, I do appreciate you being here this morning. If our listeners want to contact you, how might they do that?
I'll give out my toll-free number. It's 877-539-4040.
Okay, and is there a website? Or?
I'll give my email address also.
Okay.
That's the letter D, Kruger, which is spelled K-R-U-E-G-E-R. So it's D, Kruger, at First. And First is the number one with an S-T, Mariner, M-A-R-I-N-E-R, Bank. BANK.com. D. Kruger at FirstMarinerBank.com.
Terrific. Sarah and Duane, thank you so much for being with us. Sam, I'm going to turn it back to you in Atlanta at this point.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you, Sarah and Duane, for being our guest. Great information. We very much appreciate you being with us. Joining us today in the Atlanta studio, I have two guests. The first is Eileen Nebhut. Eileen is the owner of Habitation. I knew I was stumbling on that. In Habitation. And also joining us today is Lynn Barbie. Lynn Barbie is the Community Relations Manager for Homestead Hospice and Palliative Care. Let's begin with Eileen. The first question is, what is your company about? But before we go there, give us a little bit of a background on yourself, and how did you come to be the owner of In Habitation?
Thanks, Sam. Background on me is I'm originally from Nashville, Tennessee, and graduated from Vanderbilt University with a degree in psychology, which I never used, and ended up working in between New York for 3 years, and then I've spent the last 7 years in London, England, and moved here 5.5, nearly 6 years ago to Atlanta.
Okay, I have to bite. What were you in New York and London, England?
Yeah, it's been a scattered career. New York was publishing. I was working for a professional publishing house, and then I decided that really art was my calling, so I went to study at Christie's in London and ended up staying and working there for 7 years.
Oh, that's my wife would love that love that experience. Tell us about your experience here in Atlanta and what you're presently doing.
Atlanta has been great. I moved here knowing, I think, five people, and it's been a wonderful experience. When I moved here, I obviously did not follow the kind of corporate ladder, so I knew that I wasn't going to get a job at Coke and do the corporate thing, so I was really looking to start a business for myself. And after studying art, I did a couple of years of design school thinking about architecture, and I come from a developer, architect, designer family, so it's always kind of been in the blood. So I wanted to do something where I could combine what I know about interiors and exteriors and the whole kind of home thing. So I started the business 2.5 years ago.
And tell us what Inhabitation is about.
You're doing a really good job. Some people have called it Inhabilitation.
I'm trying.
Inhabitation is a home management company until I come up with a better tagline. And what that means is I offer organizing, decorating, space planning, project management, renovations, that kind of thing, aging in place, universal design, gutters to fine art, anything to do with the home, really. And I have clients where I'm working in the basement and I'm doing the really dirty stuff, and I have other clients where I'm, you know, help buying the furniture and picking out the paint colors. And most recently, I have a new partnership with the Hoots Group and Sawhorse here in town, and they are a very old and well-established design-build firm. Sawhorse has been around for 32 mm-hmm. years. So I'm now, all those services that I offer through Inhabitation, I'm also offering to their clientele.
That's great. Well, you know, our show is dedicated, or at least driven towards the senior, and you made a statement that you do in aging in place services. Mm-hmm. Now bridge that for our listeners about how you provide services for those seniors.
I became interested in the senior market. It's such a fascinating market because it spans, you know, people who are more active than I am to, you know, 105. And I got involved with, I think, the Greater Atlanta Home Builders Association offers a certification course called CAPS. That Certified Aging in Place Specialist, and I got that certification, and which was a great learning experience. And it has to do with, besides the business management end of it, it has to do with modifications that can be made to the home so that people can live there longer. And it's not necessarily for the elderly or handicapped, but universal design meant for anyone, ease of use and access for anyone, no matter height, age, ability, whatever. And I'm also a member of the NAIPC, which is the National Aging in Place Council, which you're familiar with. So that's a great organization that combines so many different people and so many different businesses that have to do with the senior market.
When you are approaching a senior and you are going in to facilitate their aging in place, okay, what are some of the recommendations? What are some of give us some functionality of what you're doing there.
Some of the things are really, I'd say, no-brainers. It's the width of hallways. It's the width of doors. It's the, I forget the term of it. It's the zero threshold mm-hmm. where there's no barrier between you getting from one room or inside to the outside. There are things that look... They're grab bars. Mm-hmm. You can make grab bars look good, but some things do look institutional. But other things, like, you know, the NAIPC, we just co-sponsored an event at one of the home shows here in Atlanta this year. And in the kitchen, there are companies now that make kitchen cabinets that you push a button. If you're in a wheelchair, you push a button, and the cabinets literally come off the wall and descend to the countertop so that you have ease of access. So there are things that, on first glance, don't look at all, you know, I've got special needs or anything like that, but just very interesting technological advances, put it that way.
You answered what I was going to ask, and, you know, I would think that if you live in your home for 20, 30 years, you're set in the way it is, you're comfortable, and then someone comes in and says, well, you got to change this doorway, you got to change these cabinets, and it's not going to be very palatable to the individual. So I guess what you just described are some of the ways you do that. Are there any others that you might mention?
Are there more affordable ones? Like, that sounds pretty intense.
You know, you say that. I don't know how much it was, mm-hmm. but I don't think it was that costly. Area rugs, they go away.
Yeah.
You know, those special tubs that have doors that open up so that you can walk in
right.
and not stand up in a shower. I'm trying to think of the other things at the show. Trolley systems that run from the ceiling. So if you are limited access, or if your caretaker can't pick you up mm-hmm. from a bed to the bathroom to wherever, trolley systems that are mechanical. You push a button and the seat kind of lowers and someone can help you get in and move you from room to room.
Mm-hmm.
There's a blog or something, I'm not sure the exact name, called Aging in Place Technology Watch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting place to pick up on a lot of the new, you know, systems that are coming out there. There's surveillance cameras that are triggered by movement. So if you have a diabetic, whatever, you're old, and the trigger goes off at 3 o'clock in the morning, the son or the caregiver or whoever is notified, and it's really interesting.
Now, even if this stuff does cost a lot of money, is it less expensive for the person to stay at home as opposed to moving to a facility?
It depends on the facility. It depends on the home. It depends on their budget. I mean, there's so many. That's part of the process, is going in and talking.
And then weighing the costs and
right,
the benefits.
Right. And the most I have found, and I've been told, that one of the most important things, and I think you touched on it earlier, is the senior, quote-unquote senior, has the power, not you.
Right.
So if you go in and say, well, we need to do this, we need to do that, and then this order, and you
right.
need to give me this amount of money, and it's, you know, you need to move out while all this is being done, it's not a good approach. If they, and this is not an act, they do have the power. So
sure.
if you say, listen, these are the options, and part of my responsibility is to be the educator.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm affiliated with a few different organizations, and I touch on those, or I pull from those as needed to get the information to be able to provide
the best possible
right.
answer for.
How would you begin the process? You come into my home, you look at me, say, Sam Grass, you know, you've got, you don't say this, but obviously I've got these issues. And how do you begin? I mean, it's going to be a difficult task to move me to where you need for me to be. So how would you begin that process?
If you're aging in place, if you're wanting to stay in your home?
Yes,
right.
It depends on the scope. So the client determines the scope. If you say, really, my bathroom's the issue, then we focus on the bathroom. If it's kind of open-ended, and then I kind of go in and treat it as doing a home audit. And I've got, it's not even a standardized form, but a form that I made up. And you go around and you basically, what I do is sit down, talk to the client,
mm-hmm.
get the scope of the project.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd go around and get a tour of the home and normally take pictures of everything. And then get your idea, sit down with the client again and get your idea of success. So what would be, and it might not be, well, that wall needs to be moved and this rug needs to be picked up. It might be a feeling or a,
mm-hmm.
you know, I want the grandchildren to be able to come over and play or whatever. And then I'd go home and study the pictures and pull on, you know, the different databases and knowledge sources that I have and come up with a proposal
mm-hmm.
and a cost for that proposal. And that's when the client can say, oh, never in a million years, and it's too much, or you know, something like that. Then you scale back. And if they say, well, gosh, that's nothing, let's go farther. So it's completely customizable, if that's a word, to the client.
You're going to begin this process. You mentioned one of your services is a professional organizer. You're going to begin this process, and you go into the home, and there's 60 years of stuff. Do you address that, and how?
The organizing specifically?
Yes.
Again, it's client-driven, so if the client says, let's assume the client says, gosh, I need some help. You want to establish categories, photographs and clothes and collectibles and then you get into hoarding, which is a whole other issue, and I don't really deal with that specifically. And it can be, for some people, it can be a very tedious emotional process, and you have to be very aware of the emotional sensors. It's a time-consuming thing. Sometimes you're going through touching every single piece of paper and every single belonging and figuring out what goes to the children, what gets consigned, what needs to be sold, what can be thrown away, what gets donated, you know, recycling.
And you assist in that process.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, is your client typically the senior or is it the family? Like the kids of the senior?
Well, it's both because I'm vice president of NAPO Georgia, which is the National Association of Professional Organizers. And two clients have found me through there, one in New York and one in Florida. And in both cases, it's the parent that they were calling about in Atlanta. So I was hired by the children of, but I have been hired by the senior themselves, mm-hmm. if that's what you're asking.
Yeah. I don't know which one. Is it 50-50? Are you going to go either way?
50-50.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can certainly understand. I look at Lee's heard my whining stories about the pace of my life and my lifestyle, and I can certainly understand. You come to a gentleman, a guy like me that lives the lifestyle that I live, and I have these parents. I don't have time. I don't have the time. I don't have the energy to do it. I can certainly see where that I would come to you readily and say, yeah, you know, Eileen, take over. Hopefully it would be a painless situation. Tell us, what is it that you find most rewarding in what you're doing?
I am simplifying. I think it's simplifying people's lives because
mm-hmm.
there's so many different obstacles. It's either the possessions, or they've got to move, or they don't know how to take care of their home. And I think it's good being female in this position, and I think it's a level of trust. You know, mm-hmm. you're always selling yourself first. So I forgot your original question.
What's the most rewarding?
Is establishing that trust and having clients call me and say, no matter who I'm associated with or what bids I get to do what work, the most important relationship is with me, and that's the best thing to hear.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. We didn't discuss this earlier. Do you have a particular situation, story, that where you've gone in and it was at this stage, and when you got done, it was over here?
Yes, and this is radio, so I can't show pictures, but the couple from Florida who hired me for their aunt here in Atlanta, the aunt had been a nurse, and now she's in her 80s, and she lives in an apartment here in Atlanta and had not let anyone in the apartment for 10 years, which is a
red flag.
Red flag. And she had a hard time letting me in. And, of course, the nephew hired me. So I got in, and I realized that I don't know how to define the situation except to say that it was very, very filthy and a little bit of hoarding and just a loss of control over her life. And she was moving into a retirement home. I should have worn a mask. And I don't know how she lived there for so long. But I hired the necessary team. Basically everything, like I said, needed to be consigned, given away, inherited, that kind of thing, and pack her up and move her to the retirement home. And when you walked in, it was a disaster. I mean, the place wasn't big, but you would be amazed what hoarders can pack in.
I've seen it, I know.
And at the end of it, after hiring the muscle and, you know, all of that and getting everything taken care of, I took pictures of the place so I could send it to the nephew in Florida. And they just wrote the most amazing letter. And they had come up and worked with me for a little bit about the whole process. And it's transforming. You know, it does transform people's lives. And I went to visit the aunt in her new home, and she said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Well, I just wanted to make sure you're okay."
Yeah, that's got to be rewarding. I can imagine in a situation like that, it's so overwhelming. You don't know where to begin, and you don't have, as you described it, the muscle to do it. I can see where that would really, really be rewarding to walk into that.
Well, almost more important than the muscle, although the muscle is very important, is the schedule. A to Z, and they look at it and they say, I can't possibly.
Right.
It's breaking it down into the pieces that they can digest.
Right.
and then hiring what's needed to get through that process. The schedule is key.
Yeah, Lee knows I have this. Don't eat the elephant in one meal.
Right.
One bite at a time and move forward. Yeah, that's great. Tell us, Eileen, for someone who might be listening and they are overwhelmed. I mean, they've been, as I described, 60 years, and they know that it's time to make a change. They don't want to, but what piece of advice could you give them to kind of get started there?
That's a hard question. I'd almost say contact the NAIPC.
Okay.
You know, an organization that has so many different professionals within it, and find the person they need. If it's someone like me, call someone like me. If it's a reverse mortgage person, you know, there's a whole list, but it's a great database of people who provide the services that seniors need here in Georgia.
Well, I think what you were saying, and it's true, there's information out there for the seniors. Ask questions, and get there. That's great. Thank you very much. If our listeners would like to reach you, how can they contact you?
The usual ways. My phone number, 404-309-2152, and probably just as easy is my email address or website. The website is www.inhabitation.com, and that's spelled without the first I, so just the letter N, habitation.com. And the email is the same, eileen@inhabitation.com.
Spell it one more time.
N-H-A-B-I-T-A-T-I-O-N.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thanks. That's great information. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Okay. Our next guest is Lynn Barbie. Lynn is with Homestead Hospice and Palliative Care. Good morning, Lynn. How are you?
Good morning.
I'm going to go a little bit out of order. And for our listeners, tell us what, I think most of our listeners know what hospice is. What is palliative care?
Sure. I'll be happy to explain that. Palliative is really intense comfort care. There is a separate, in some states is recognized as a level of care that someone doesn't have to have a terminal illness, a life-limiting illness in order to get extra services. Mm-hmm. In state of Georgia doesn't recognize it as a body in which they can govern it or manage it.
Is it a precursor to hospice?
Yes, okay. In fact, it is. It is a precursor to hospice, but hospice is also palliative in its.
I understand it overlaps a lot, but that I think that helps us. Okay,
absolutely.
Well, that's great. Now, again, I'm going to jump backwards. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from, and how did you get into this arena?
Okay, great. Well, again, I'm Lynn Barbie, and I tell you, life just has an amazing way of putting things in your path as you go on your life's journey. And I consider myself a native of Atlanta because I've been here since 6 years old with my family, and I got started really in my love for seniors. Really at an age when I was in college, mm-hmm. I got a degree in PR. But at the time, I was going through college, and my grandmother who raised me mm-hmm. I was her caregiver. So I took care of her while I was trying to go through college, and my church family was absolutely wonderful. You know, they would provide things, but, you know, they weren't there for, in the middle of the night, you know, to turn her and to make those really tough decisions about what to do, you know, with mom. Mm-hmm. And so I went through that process alone, not knowing about hospice. Well, fast forward to 1997, end up marrying into a family where I just got a chance to embrace my mom and papa. First time I'd ever heard mamma and papa name before. in fact, papa turned 100 today, so he's 100 years old today. But got a chance to just really work with seniors through them, helping them secure housing. I worked in property management at that time and for a company that's very focused on seniors and providing activities and different things for families. And so I knew what was available to them and reduced income housing resources for them. So, you know, I was able to assist them to get secure housing. And then I went into work. I went to work for an assisted living company.
Okay.
I worked there for a while, and then I remember my boss came in. She was educating me about Medicare and Medicaid in reference to hospice, and I thought, wow, this is really interesting. And so from there, you know, I was offered a job in hospice, and I haven't looked back yet. It has been an amazing journey because it is something that you get an opportunity to help so many different people that just don't know what resources are available out there to them.
Yeah, you answered my next question. I was going to ask you, hospice is from just purely an emotional position is very, very trying. And what keeps you going? What do you find? There's got to be something that you find so rewarding to keep you pursuing it.
Well, what keeps me going is the gift that I feel like I'm given to be able to assist people, to help people. People don't know that, you know, they can, for at no cost to them, you know, they can have someone come into their home to help them, you know, a nurse to come out, you know, one to two times a week, an aide to help them with bathing, dressing, their regular activities of daily living, a social worker that's going to say, okay, what else does this family need? Mm-hmm. Do they need Meals on Wheels? Do they need, you know, what else do they need? A chaplain that's going to be there for them to provide the extra spiritual and emotional support. So it is a whole approach. And so it keeps me, I thrive. I'm a people person. Mm-hmm. I love, I guess that's probably why I thought, you know, years ago, I'm not going to tell you how many years ago it was, but years ago, I thought I was going to be a broadcast journalist. And so that all ended.
Well, you're beginning that career.
And then now, you know, so see what I mean by life's journey? You never know what's going to happen. But, I love doing what I do because even with our company, it's about living life to the fullest. And that's what I encourage people to do every single day. I go out to senior centers and assisted livings and, you know, personal homes. And I'm out there in the trenches talking about how do you live life to the fullest, not, you know, taking the word hospice and being fearful of that. You know, maybe there is an illness, a chronic illness that you have, but, you know, you can live life to the fullest because none of us are guaranteed how many days we have, but the days that we do have, how we live them is what's important.
You know, and you've said it well, what many, many people have said about hospice. It's not about dying, it's about living. Yeah, that's exactly what you just said.
What percentage of people take advantage of a hospice? Do you know any statistics on that?
Well, I can tell you that from a percentage standpoint, not enough people are getting...
Because hospice has been around for a long time. It's not like this just started, you know, 2 years ago.
Absolutely. But it has such a stigma to it that most people affiliated with this is... the end. This
like
is
you're
dying.
Quitting on this.
Right. And hospice is truly more about hope redefined. It's not about giving up hope. It's redefining hope.
Sure.
You know, saying, hey, let's look for hope, you know, for better days, maybe pain-free days.
Right.
Conversations that you might need to have with your family or your loved ones.
But is this a cultural thing for Americans or like in other countries? Are they more open to hospice? Is it more popular there and more part of the process in other cultures? Or is this an American like, hey, we're going to battle to the very end and we don't want to quit? And
well, it's the philosophy is different. In fact, I have attended conferences on diversity and hospice. And one of the things that we have seen is that in diverse populations, that is the area, those are the areas or the people that embrace hospice the least.
Hmm.
So, we're such a melting pot here, in the United States. So it's in other countries, you know, we've got all kinds of people, but we do, hospice is available, to meet the needs of people where they are. Right. And so we do look to, you know, embrace people who may have cultural differences that say, okay, you know, is this something that, you know, how do we embrace culture with this word hospice? It's even thought of differently. So more and more people, I think if I bring it back to being American, 70% of the people, and the studies do show this, 70% of the people who have a chronic illness want to be at home, usually. Right. Mm-hmm. They don't typically want to go to a inpatient hospice unit, which is a lot of times because they don't know what's available out there to them. When they get to the hospital, they've had a fall or they've had some major change in their health conditions. And, you know, the hospital says, oh, you got to go to, you know, your loved one has to go to an inpatient unit. There's a criteria for that. Mm-hmm. So, but for long-term care solutions, the goal is to assist people so that they can live longer. Yeah. It's not just for the people who just have the last days or weeks in their lives. It is a minimum of a 6-month benefit. It can continue for as long as that person needs it. And some people actually graduate from hospice. Right.
And, and we've talked to people in hospice and around it since we started the show. And all the examples are the patient and their family always wishes they had started it sooner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I can tell you that from even my personal experience, you know, as being a caregiver for, you know, mom. I mean, I wish I had known about those resources that are available out there. And
but is that the reason for the delay, do you think, is from the doctor's standpoint, or is it just from the lack of education from the family of the patient?
Both. Surprisingly, it is both. You know, doctors are in the field for healing. Their concept is, you know, let's cure. And right. So that's a different mindset than a lot of times just managing symptoms.
Right.
Hospice does not cure. It manages symptoms.
Right. Right.
So sometimes it is a lack of education in terms of when should we start having those conversations? But that's what we do. You know, those of us who are in hospice do go to physicians and case managers at hospitals and educate them right. on the new criteria. We are part of our team. We've got our regional director of clinical services is a part of the National Palliative Care Board. So hospice and palliative care board. So there is a focus on making sure that people in the community are educated. And that's kind of how our Hope Foundation actually got started. We have a Homestead Hospice Hope Foundation where we are there for people beyond those, outside of those scopes of needs that hospice can provide. Mm-hmm. For instance, if it's somebody that might have a need for, you know, there's so many things that a caregiver is burdened with. I mean, sometimes they're trying to take care of their loved one and they're stuck with trying to figure out, how am I going to pay the electric bill? Mm-hmm. Or how am I going to get this done? Or how am I going to get food on the table? Or, you know, just other things like, you know, well, I know hospice is there, you know, for this period of time, if they, you know, qualify, for the care, but then maybe I need to go to work and I need some extra caregiving hours. So how can I get plugged into resources for that? So the Homestead Hope Foundation really serves as a vehicle to support people beyond what hospice does and to pull in our industry partners to say, this is what a family needs. I'll give you an example. I had a family, and once again, about how life just brings you to things. I had a family to call me. The daughter called me. She was needing to get some help for her mom, a dialysis patient. And she called me seeking care for her. Well, in our conversation and discovering questions I was asking her, I found out that the daughter actually needed help herself as well. She mm-hmm. was very, very sick with two young children, and she was trying to work and take care of herself and all of that. Well, the day that we were getting ready to meet, she ended up in the hospital herself the day we were going to talk about her mom. Well, I followed her through the process of, you know, helping her get out, you know, encouraging her and, you know, to hang in there. And so the day that we actually, our team actually met at the family's home to meet with them, I walked through the foyer And you know, a lot of people have pictures in their foyer. And I realized when I looked at the pictures that this was somebody I went to school with.
Oh.
And so I called her name.
So they were your age?
Yeah.
Wow.
38. Well, I'm not 38 anymore. but she was a young girl. And, in fact, she was younger than me at that time. And when we were able to connect on that common level, it made her feel so much more comfortable that, wow, you know, I remember you from high school. Mm-hmm. And I remember. And so what we did when she actually, her death actually preceded her mom's. And it was a really sad situation. It was an August, it was August of last year, in fact. August of last year, it was time for those two children to go to school. They needed uniforms, school supplies, and the family just didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And Mally, our owner, said, you know what? We've got to support this family. And so that is how, one of the ways that we are able to assist families. You know, yeah. We can, it's about looking at the whole family,
right,
not just the person that's sick,
yeah.
You know, not just that person that's on hospice, it's everybody.
That's a great, great story about your organization. And I'd like for you to expand on that. Tell us about Homestead Hospice. Tell us its uniqueness. Why is it so special?
Great. Well, I think Homestead Hospice is very special. You know, not all hospice companies are the same. Some will do more than others, and some will do less than others. But our owner, Mally, is very focused on expanding and saying, what does a family need? It's not about your bottom line. You've got to be out there, and let's give what we need to these families. We do things like palliative chemo.
Mm-hmm.
And I explain that to mean that, let's say you have somebody that has cancer, and they know that they're not going to be cured necessarily from that cancer, but the medications that they, or the treatments that they take, ward off the pain or allow it to keeps them from growing, the cancer from growing. So if it's, you know, if it's a situation where we can do palliative chemo, where we pay for that cost for that person to continue to take those treatments, absolutely, we do it.
Okay.
So
for our listeners who might have a loved one that is at a stage where your services might be requested, be it a hospice organization, what piece of advice as they begin this process could you give them as they're looking at the multitude of choices they may have?
I would say look at the organizations that will allow you as much flexibility as possible. That is very important, and that goes back to some myths of hospice, as the gentleman was saying earlier about, you know, it's been around for a while, this is not new, but it has been laced with a lot of different myths, like, you know, medications, oh, they're going to over-medicate mm-hmm. me, or I'm not going to be able to take my medications, or, you know, oh, I can't keep my same doctor, those kinds of things. You want to be with an organization that allows you, within the law and the parameters of the state that you're in, to be able to do what's right for your family.
That's great. People have to understand that hospice is not about being in a box. It is about freedom to live the life that you deserve to live and giving you some ability to do that.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Ours.
No, that's all right. I know where you're going. Tell us how our listeners can contact you or contact Homestead Hospice if they'd like to.
Okay, sure. Well, we can be reached at, we've got two numbers, of course, but I'll give you the 800 number or the 877 number. It's 877-355-HHPC, which stands for Homestead Hospice Palliative Care, but break that down. It's 4472. So, or you can visit our website at homesteadhospice.net. Locally here in Atlanta, we can be reached at 678-966-0077. And, you know, we hope that people will be touched by the butterfly. Our logo is the butterfly to remind people to live life to the fullest, just like a butterfly. So, hope that you will.
That's great. Thank you very much, Lynn. I certainly appreciate it. Eileen, thank you for being here. Great information, great conversation. Same to you, Lynn. Certainly appreciate you joining us today. And that's it for today. We thank you for tuning in. And for our listeners who might want to listen to today's broadcast on the web, they can do so at eugeriaradio.com. And in closing, as usual, I'd like to say if the youth of our nation is its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. That's it for today. Thank you.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.